Blog Talk Radio.
And it's Ken Kratzer for CBSI Services, talking business from our corporate headquarters in Harrison, New York. Another edition of our CBSI Services, talking business podcast. And we are very pleased today to talk with Sally French, who's a writer for Wirecutter Money. And her articles are featured very often in the New York Times in their business section. Sally, good to talk with you today. How are you?
Great to talk with you. I'm doing so well. Thanks for having me.
Very good. Well, you've got an interesting background. I mean, to make it to have your articles appear in the business section of the New York Times on the top of the page, by the way, that is really something. Maybe take us through your background. You know, I know you've had, you studied journalism at the University of Missouri, and then also in Germany, it looks like. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in writing, if you would.
Yeah, I mean, it's so great to have this job at Wirecutter. It's an incredible opportunity, and every journalism student's dream is to work at the New York Times, and here I am. So it's been a great journey. The way it actually started is actually, well, my first internship was covering travel and tourism for the Orange County Register, which Orange County in Southern California, you can guess, is Disneyland. So while the New York Times is great, actually, I think my first job was my best job because I got paid to go to Disneyland. But
wow.
From there, I went to school at the University of Missouri, which is an incredible journalism school. And one thing they told us we needed to do is we needed to blog about something, and we needed to set up a personal blog as a way to get experience learning about the internet, how that operates, what people click on, how the technical aspects of it work, and then just developing our writing. And I always wondered, what should I blog about? And I have a bunch of passions around, fitness, around Disney. And there were just so many blogs on those topics already that I said, I don't want to even compete with those. So I thought, what is not being written about yet? And it was in 2013. That same year, our school offered a class on drones. So I enrolled in the class, and I started blogging about drones. And that was the first, real kickoff of my journalism career, is this blog all about drones. It's called The Drone Girl. And I think that actually sort of paved the way for my career ladder.
Well, that's it. I got to ask you, because I follow the military and veterans in my media work. What part of the drone industry are you covering? Is it the personal use for photography, or is it other uses? There's so many applications for drones that are emerging.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. There's quite a difference between military drones and consumer drones. And so I'm really sort of covering the consumer drones. So that's just someone who says, I want this really neat gadget to take photos or follow me. And then also sort of the commercial aspect. So there's so many great use cases of drones. There's people using it for thermal imaging. If you're a farmer and you need a thermal look at your field to see where it's dry, maybe where you need to add some sort of fertilizer, really other kind of creative uses of drones. One of my favorite things is gathering whale DNA. It's actually really difficult to get whale DNA, and as I'm sure you're not surprised, but there's DNA in your snot. And when a whale comes and blows up its air hole, it's just blowing up its snot, essentially. So people are flying drones over these whales. When the whale blows out its air, there's a little contraption that can open and close and sort of get that snot, and they can extract the DNA, and the whale has no idea it happened. It's completely non-invasive, and it's a really cheap way for scientists to gather this data.
That I would never have thought of.
Yeah, exactly. And I love how many unique uses there are. So I started blogging about those really interesting stories. And from there, I started traveling the world. I went to the Arctic Circle for 10 days to write about drones. And that almost sort of piqued my interest in travel. I've gone a lot to the Middle East because there's such a strong oil and gas industry there, and they're using drones to inspect pipelines. So I've gotten really involved in travel. And from there, this blog started growing, and I got all these followers on Twitter. And so that led to my first sort of like real job employed by someone else was MarketWatch, which is the investment reporting arm of the Wall Street Journal. And
sure.
I started doing a lot of audience engagement work for them. Piqued my interest in finance, which led to my current spot today, working for the New York Times and Wirecutter, actually writing about money.
That, well, that's neat. It's a fascinating route that you have followed by building up a blog on one subject and then building up audience engagement. That's a great term. And that leading to opportunities at the Wall Street Journal and now at the New York Times. Well, let's talk a little bit about Wirecutter. It's, as you said, it's somewhat new. What are some of the typical stories that Wirecutter is focusing on for the Times?
Yeah, so right now we're primarily focused on credit card related stories, just because that's what we're honed in on. We're totally dialed in at learning about credit cards. And we really want to do a lot of reader service. We obviously want to recommend cards that give, you know, the best points and the best travel perks, because that's sort of what a lot of people are going for. But often a lot of the cards that give you the best rewards rates aren't necessarily the best cards for you because of other reasons. There's complicated redemptions, which if the redemption is too hard, you're not going to redeem your points anyway. And so many points go unused each year. We're also reading the fine print, looking for things like hidden fees. Do you have to pay a fee if you want to pay your credit card bill by phone? And I love that Wirecutter affords us the time to read the fine print of all of these cards to really consider the best card for most people.
Absolutely. Well, you've written a number of articles this year and late last year, and advice to consumers. You wrote just a couple of weeks ago, the best way to use a credit card, treat it like cash. And you talk about making a credit card purchase feel tactile. Grab a receipt, set spending limits on it. What did you find out and when you researched this topic about helping customers responsibly use credit?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. I think Wirecutter's audience is largely younger people, and I've found a lot of young people are either afraid of credit cards or they just don't know. And I always tell young people, you need to build your credit because you need to have a great score. If you want to buy a house, you want that lower interest rate. If you need a loan for something like a car, you need to have a good credit score. And then sort of, I say this as a cherry on top, is you can get rewards. So if you have a card like the Citi Double Cash, you're getting 2% back for purchases you're already making. So if you're spending $100 on groceries, why not get that $2 in cash back? That's you know, quote unquote, free money that you're getting. So I want young people to have credit cards for both of those two reasons, but I know a lot of people are scared either because there's misinformation or no information. I still am shocked to hear so many people who think that you need to carry a balance in order to build credit, and that's just a total myth. And carrying a balance means you're paying interest. You shouldn't be paying money to the bank. You should be paying off your bills in full. So the reason why I wrote that headline, the best way to treat a credit card is to treat it like cash, is because you can't carry a balance when it comes to cash. You know, if you don't have the money to pay for it at the store, if you hand them a $10 bill and the product is $20 bill or is $20, they're not going to give you that product. And so I really want to think about credit cards the same way. Is treat it just like you would cash. Pay it off right in full. There are obviously situations where you need to make a purchase. Maybe it's an emergency car repair that you can't pay off in full. But for the most part, you should be paying off your bill in full every month.
And you talk on that article some very sound advice about setting up reminders about when the due date is for card payments to avoid late fees and make bills part of your routine. Boy, is my wife good at that. She every Sunday she goes through all of our bills and gets them out on time
Yeah, I love that. Just make it a habit. Be like, every Sunday, we're just doing this. This is a Sunday routine. And I think that's a completely brilliant way to go.
Well, I'll pass that to my wife. She's very good at that. Hey, now you talked a little bit over the holidays back in November in an article, make the most of your credit card rewards for the gift season. Boy, have gift cards taken off in the holiday season. And obviously, impact of Amazon growing and online shopping for the holidays. What did you see happening in the holiday purchases by credit cards and the opportunities that people had to use reward points, as you described, for purchases?
Yeah, I mean, there are tons of ways you can use your rewards. I will start by the worst way to use your rewards, so don't do this, is I find this creeps up, especially during the holidays, is credit card companies will offer hot products. I know it seems like the Instant Pot was the hot product this year, and they'll say, you can get this Instant Pot for, you know, 20,000 points. And it's like, people don't know what 20,000 points mean. Is that worth $20? Is that worth $200? We have no idea. And so people often fall for those Instant Pot purchases using their points. So I would say, unless you really, really know what the points are worth and you've done the math to make sure it's a good deal, if you're not willing to do that, don't get the products. But often gift cards are a great way to spend your points. They're a gift that most people love to receive. And often credit card companies will offer sort of rewards bonuses. So you might get a little, you know, 10% boost discount if you get, say, a Target gift card, something like that. I also really recommend that people look for travel deals, especially during the holidays. Often a lot of hotel and airlines base their redemptions just on the same route. So they might say, this route from LAX to Chicago is always 20,000 points or 20,000 miles. But we know that during the holidays, the cash rates go up. And so often you're looking at a great deal if you redeem your sort of fixed flights or hotels during the holidays, because you're getting a much better value since you're traveling during a peak season.
Absolutely. And you make a neat point that I always find, and we do some work here at CBSI on supporting, is VIP experiences. And some card issuers, especially some of the top premium cards, will let you redeem points for VIP experiences. And they can be exclusive to many sports events, musical events. Tell us a little bit about why that's a good opportunity for consumers.
Totally. I actually just read this great story that made me so jealous about a woman who used her Chase points to book a VIP experience at Sundance Film Festival. And she was writing about how she got to see all these celebrities and go to all these after parties. And what's really cool about these VIP experiences is they're often money can't buy experiences. And so you're always, you know, wondering, doing the math, trying to figure out if these credit card rewards are worth it. And it can be a headache to figure out, you know, as I said, is this Instant Pot worth the 20,000 points or not? And in a lot of ways, you can just completely forgo that headache and use your points on something that money can't buy anyway, and have just a totally great, memorable experience doing something like Sundance, or as you mentioned, there's lots of sporting events. You get to sit in the VIP section. I've seen places like French Laundry is a famous restaurant in the San Francisco Bay Area, and you get to have a private dinner with the chef. You can't put a dollar figure on that, so it's great to have credit card rewards to pay for it.
Absolutely. And you do mention that article about avoiding shopping portals and why do you find that not to be a good opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen a great redemption in a shopping portal. If someone has seen a good redemption, please tweet at me at SAF Media. I would love to see it. But I do think that, you know, a lot of people just let their credit card rewards go unused through the whole year. Maybe 5 years they haven't opened up their rewards account. They say, oh, I have all these rewards. You know, my mom was talking about she wants an Instant Pot for Christmas. I'm just going to use my rewards to pay for it. And they just want to do something with their rewards. And so I think a lot of credit card issuers feel like they can sort of capitalize on those people who are unaware and just want to use their points for something. But there are so many better redemptions out there.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right that the VIP experiences can really be a high value because there's so many intangibles in that versus some of the online redemption sites. Hey, you know, my favorite article that you've written, because I go to Washington a lot, is How I Survived a Week Without My Wallet. When you traveled to Washington and on arrival in D.C., you discovered your wallet was missing. You may have left it on the flight there. And how you used your smartphone with an embedded payment plan to get you through much of the trip until you got your wallet back.
Yes, that was so wild. You know, I've always seen things like Apple Pay, Chase Pay, and I write about money, and I've never thought to set these things up because I've always felt like if it's not broken, don't fix it. Why do I need to set up Apple Pay on my phone if I can just use my normal credit card as is? I always felt like just setting up something new on my phone would just be extra work for me. And it took me losing my wallet to realize that setting this step up on my phone eliminated so much headache. So I had lost my wallet. I was super stressed about what to do. Actually, my boyfriend was with me, so I was able to ask him for some money. So when I went out by myself, I would at least have some cash because I wanted a little bit of a backup. But it turns out that I never needed to use it. I banked with Bank of America, and within, you know, a mile of my hotel, there were three different branches I could go to. So I walked in there in a panic, and I asked them, what do I do? And the very nice person helped me set up my credit card on my phone. She was able to access my account. I had to verify some information with her so she would know that I am who I said I was, since I didn't have any identification. And I set up my account on my phone, and now I have my credit card and my debit card tied to my phone. Even with Bank of America, I was able to pull out more cash from the ATM by just holding my phone up to the ATM. And even a number of other things, like I have an Equinox gym membership. You can set up your login there through your phone. So I actually went to the Equinox in D.C. and was able to use my phone to go there. My Priority Pass lounges. I love my airport lounges. That's a membership program that gets you into thousands of airports around the world.
Sure.
I was able to access those on my phone. So I didn't have my Priority Pass card, but I still got into the airport lounge. And to this day, I barely pull out my wallet. It's so convenient when you're at Trader Joe's. You know, my phone's already in my hand because I'm constantly texting people anyway. And I don't even need to pull out my wallet, which I feel like is safer. I don't need to, you know, have this wallet out in a crowd that someone could steal. I just scan my phone at the register, check out my milk, and I leave. It's so painless.
Well, that is certainly a great story because it reminds us all that a smartphone can be a great backup. I mean, we all tend to still find the convenience of plastic great utility there, but a smartphone can be great backup. When you are researching smartphones and payments and some of the plans as you did looking at the Apple product and you know, as Google has a product, Samsung, what's some of the advice that you and your colleagues are recommending about smartphones and as a way to use as a payment device?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, it is much safer, is what all the experts say. You're not, you know, swiping a credit card that could be bait for skimmers. I remember once I was on vacation, I swiped my card at a foreign ATM. And then, of course, right after that, I found all these charges, which I know someone had probably put a skimming device in my ATM. So it's much safer that way. That being said, you know, we sort of touched on this earlier, but making payments tactile is so important, and you want to feel the pain of paying, and just holding your smartphone up you might not feel the pain of pain. It's so easy to check out because you don't even need your wallet. You just tap your phone. So make sure you have measures in place that you're not just willy-nilly tapping your phone on every little thing, but looking at your bill every month, making sure that, you know, you're happy with the charges being made, you're happy with the things you bought, making sure the charges are accurate, and making sure that you're not exceeding your budget.
Sure. Now, one of the things you were getting at is the growth of online shopping, and just every holiday season it seems like it's bigger and bigger, the amount of activity online, and certainly the impact that Amazon has had in with their delivery and the facilities they bought up to handle tremendous volumes. But are there any concerns or cautions that you've been researching, you've been writing about as far as how consumers should approach online shopping?
Yeah, I mean, again, like that pain of pain thing is so easy to not feel when you're online shopping. I love the Amazon Visa Signature credit card because it gets you a great rate on Amazon. And they advertise one of the benefits is that you can just auto-link your card to your account. It just pays right there. You don't need to punch in numbers again. And then you can use your rewards to spend at Amazon, and it creates this cycle of it is so easy to buy things at Amazon. You're getting rewards towards your next things that you buy at Amazon. And while that's great for some people, maybe who are really busy, who don't want to type in their credit card number each month, I have wiped my credit card number from my browser because I want to feel the pain of pain. And it's so easy when 10 p.m. on a Friday night, you see a sale, you just put that dress in your shopping cart, you check out. But something about me having to walk over to my living room to grab my purse, to find my credit card, then to go back to the couch and punch in the credit card number, that prevents me from making that impulse buy. Whatever you can to prevent impulse buys, it's so easy to do online, make those measures happen.
Well, absolutely. Now, I just wanted to, as we get close to wrapping up, talk a little bit about topics that you may approach going forward this year. And obviously the top of everyone's mind is the coronavirus. Our company is working with our clients in the payments business about how to help and support customers who are affected with their travel or other events. What do you see happening as far as impact and remedies that the payments industry can help customers with?
Yes, I mean, coronavirus is huge, and especially with travel, people don't know if they should be booking trips or not. And I wish I had the answer for this podcast. I wish I could tell people whether or not to book a trip. I mean, it's unfolding. We're not sure. I guess my best advice for people is if you are trying to figure out if you should book a trip or not, make sure you're going with airlines that do have good cancellation policies. You know, a lot of credit cards often offer trip insurance, but because this is considered a pandemic, that is not something covered by trip insurance. So I wouldn't rely on your credit card in this case. I would do something like, I love Southwest Airlines. I have their Southwest credit card. And one of the reasons I love Southwest is because you can cancel your flight and you get the money refunded to your Southwest account. You have to use it for a future Southwest flight, but I'm flying Southwest all the time. So I know, you know, I want to go to Disneyland next month. If I have to cancel it, I'll get the money back for my flight and just put it towards a trip, you know, 4 months from now.
Absolutely. And we're talking with Sally French, who is a writer for Wirecutter Money, part of the New York Times. And Sally, just to ask you, what are some of the topics that you are developing you expect to write on later this year?
Yeah, my big thing right now is retail cards. A lot of people think that retail cards are super dangerous, and they certainly can be. They often have the highest APRs, they have the worst terms, crazy fees, low credit limits, and we're diving into the best retail cards. We're looking for the ones that don't have those things, and you can expect a guide coming to our site in hopefully a couple weeks. I'm really excited about the cards that we found. There's some really, really interesting retail cards out there that can get you great discounts at big stores, and it's been fun to find out which credit cards have terrible terms. I'm sorry and sad to see those terrible terms, but it's been a really, really interesting process to read through all those.
Well, we will look forward to that. And Sally French, I just got to, maybe we'll close on, I have so much admiration for writers, and in a relatively short time in your career, you've made it to the business pages of the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. You talk about how you got started in blogging. Sometimes writers say the key to writing is to write something every day, and I find that's very true. What have just been some of the keys that helped your writing?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Write every single day. That's the only way to really know if you're improving. But that being said, read the people you like. I always say, I just write like the people who I like to read. I actually love the work from my colleague, Taylor Tepper, who also works at Wirecutter. He writes really interesting stuff. And I have to shout out the competitors. I know we don't want to talk about, the competition, but there is some really, really amazing work being done in the travel space. Summer Hole at the Points Guy, I'm always following her on Twitter, and I think her travel adventures are crazy. I'm always reading her. There's so many awesome writers, back at other companies I've worked for at MarketWatch. Jacob Passy writes really interesting travel stuff. So read the people you like to and acknowledge, they're competitors, but they're doing great work and they're making the whole world of credit card and money content and travel content better anyway.
Absolutely. We follow the Points Guy very closely. Some of the writers there. And Sally, just maybe you could point out to our listeners, where are some of the places? We obviously see you in the business pages of the New York Times. But where are some of the other places that your work, your blogs can be found?
Yeah, well, you can find my drone work at thedronegirl.com. You can find all of my work that I write about money and credit cards on wirecutter.com. Some of that appears in print in the New York Times, so look for me there. Other than that, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at SAF Media. You can find me on Instagram. My name's Sally Ann French on Instagram. Although if you do follow me on Instagram, you're going to get a bunch of weightlifting videos. Also, that's my other passion.
I have the same. It's interesting because I do business, veterans, and college sports. So I have kind of a mixture on my social media pages, especially YouTube.
Totally.
But Sally French, so thank you so much for spending time with us today and doing a podcast. And we admire what you've achieved in writing and with the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. And I want to wish you the best on the year. And thank you for spending time with us on CBSI Talking Business.
This was fun. Thanks for having me.
So I'll do it again. Thank you so much. Sally French, writer for Wirecutter Money, the product review arm of the New York Times. So thank you, Sally. And this is Ken Kratzer for CBSI Services from our corporate headquarters in Harrison, New York. So have a good day, everybody.